lose.
You lose.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody. We are here on our last hour on a Wednesday, hump day, day after the election. We have Dr. Jan Mensink in for the practice hour. How are you today?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah, you're not depressed?
No, but we're going to talk about depression for all those who are depressed.
Yeah, for anybody who is depressed.
I want to talk about today and probably Monday. We'll see how far we go about depression issues. We've talked about this before, but it's, how should I say, it's become more and more relevant.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right word. The 40 million people in the United States have anxiety or depression issues.
Right.
That's huge.
They kind of go hand in hand, don't they? Anxiety and depression.
Yes. We'll talk about that later in the program. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Very much so. And the cost annually to the U.S. taxpayer is $52 billion. That's huge. All right. It's not a small.
Well, a lot of people, you know, leave their jobs and they go into disabilities and stuff like that because of anxiety and depression.
Yeah. It's not. Well, I want to delve into it, if that's the right way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but talk deeply. That's not the right way. Mm-hmm. You just go into it, you know, so that people listening can understand and say, "Hold on, that's me. Maybe I need to look at it." You know, maybe I'll start with a foreword. When you're listening and you say, "Hold on, I have that problem." This, you know, especially when you go through the symptoms, talk to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
These are not usually, people try to self-diagnose and self-treat. And we'll talk about some of the self-treatments that are out there.
Because that can get you in trouble right there.
Well, yeah, some of them. In fact, one of them can get you in trouble with liver failure. All right? But we'll talk about some of the herbs and mood, the things that you can, that are used a lot.
Right.
We'll talk about those later in the program or Monday, depending how long it goes, but how long it takes. But we'll go through that. We'll talk about some of the newer medicines and all that kind of stuff. But bottom line, Terry, I tell my patients, I want to treat you when you're not real depressed, really.
Right.
I don't want to treat you when you're down the bottom.
Because
when you're down the bottom, it takes forever to get you up.
Well, is there a difference between situational depression, like the people who are depressed because the
most definitely.
Election didn't turn out the way that they wanted.
Let's start with that.
Versus somebody who is clinically depressed.
These are called reactive depressions, Terry.
Right.
All right?
Right.
Situational depression is a good way of thinking of it. All right? You're blue because...
your girlfriend dropped you.
Yeah, your girlfriend dropped you. You lost your job. You know, depression, the election didn't go the right, whatever, all right? These are reactive depressions.
Mm-hmm.
They go away in 6 weeks.
Whether you treat them or not.
Whether you treat them or
not.
They go
away. Okay? They go away. Yep.
Now, if they last more than 6 weeks, you better talk to a doctor.
Because now you've got clinical depression.
Exactly, all right? And we'll talk about that later in the program, but it just... again, I say, if we're going to start going through all the symptoms of depression, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if you have 5 to 8 of these, you better see your doctor. All right? That's
okay.
Probably the best way of saying it. There's something called the ABCs of depression, all right? And I'm going to go into in detail, but there's appetite issues, B is for bed, sleep issues, C is for concentration issues, D is for suicidal issues and death issues, things like that. E is for energy issues, F is for mm-hmm. sexual issues, G is for guilt issues, and H is for agitation and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to go through those in detail, all right?
Okay.
To make it. The first thing, Terry, I want to talk about, in fact, I had a lady the other day that came in and she's clinically depressed. And she wanted a test to see if really I'm right.
Right.
All right?
Right.
And there is, for clinical medicine, there is no blood test. No test.
Right. There's no marker.
There's no test to tell you're depressed. Now, for research, totally different story. All right. For research, we do a lumbar puncture on these people.
Mm-hmm.
All right. LP, put a needle in the back around the spine and the nerves and pull off CSF. And we test for serotonin and dopamine, all these kind of things. Those are research things. They're not done clinically.
Mm-hmm.
No doctor
mm-hmm.
in town is going to do that. All right? It's a clinical diagnosis. All right? So it's important for people to know. All right?
But they can take a evaluation.
Oh, yes.
And get a score, you know, some sort of a depression score.
There are multiple depression screening things.
Right.
All right? So the first thing we'll sort of nail down is there is no test for it. It's a clinical diagnosis. All right? That's the first thing. The So let's go start going over all these symptoms. If you have fatigue and loss of energy every day. I'm not talking about once in a while. Mm-hmm. All right? No. Every day you just are tired, fatigued, you don't have any energy. All right?
Yep. Can't get off the couch.
Yeah. You feel pooped out all the time.
Right.
All right?
Right.
That's a one. Number two, feelings of worthlessness. All right? Every day. You just feel, I'm not
being productive. Yeah, I'm not getting anything done.
Why am I here kind of thing? All right?
Right.
The next thing is feelings of guilt daily. You know, God's punishing me or, I'm like this because, whatever. All mm-hmm. right? By the way, let's mention about guilt real quickly. We always ask the patients on their first interview when we screen them for depression issues. We always ask them what religion they were raised in. Why? Because certain religions are known, when you go through your early teens and you're raised in this religion, these religions, you have more issues later in life with guilt issues. All right?
Right.
Roman Catholics. I'm not against Roman Catholics. Don't get me wrong. Catholics. Seventh-day Adventists. Mormons. Jehovah's Witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
But there's certain religions where you're raised as a child. By the way, it doesn't mean to say that you will have those problems if you're raised as a Roman Catholic. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But you're more susceptible.
Well, you've been carrying a catcher's mitt for your whole life because they throw the guilt at you and you catch it all the time.
Yeah. I'm trying to think it the right way. I'm not against these religions. You know, if you're a seventh,
well, it's the reality.
But we know that if you're trained or raised in those religions early teens, it's more likely that you'd be more susceptible to these things later on in your mm-hmm. life. All right, mm-hmm. that's probably the best way to say it. All right, if you have impaired concentration, Terry, you just I can't keep your mind on things.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
mm-hmm.
You have to be careful because as we get older, our concentration abilities decrease.
Right.
No, seriously. I mean, that just, the 30-year-old or 40-year-old doesn't have a clue about this. But you get to 70 or 80 or 90, you it's a memory issue that your concentration ability.
Well, mine tends to wander a lot more.
Well, the other day I went out to my shop to get something. Remember, I got this. It came to me. That's concentration issues. But if that's all the time, there's an issue. Indecisiveness. These people can't. They just can't make a decision. They can't make their mind up. Kind of thing. All right. Insomnia, which means can't sleep, or hypersomnia, you sleep too much. Both can be. All right? And we have a little saying in the practice. We always ask, do you wake up refreshed? Because if you sleep and you don't wake up refreshed, I, as a physician, have to know why.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is depression issues, lack of serotonin, dopamine, and glutamine. All right? Or you have sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. Cannot be missed, because if I miss sleep apnea, nothing else I do will work for you. All right? Especially if you're obese and you wake up tired. I have to prove that you don't have sleep apnea. What percentage of people have sleep apnea who are not obese? Roughly about 15%.
Okay.
Roughly in that area. All right? So insomnia or hypersomnia, a sleep disturbance, and especially if you don't wake up refreshed, all right?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, in fact, I had a lady a couple of weeks ago came in. Her husband, their main complaint is he snores all night, all right?
She thinks
he stops breathing, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But he wakes up refreshed. It doesn't. If you wake up refreshed, you do not have sleep apnea.
Okay.
End of discussion. It's the simplest way of saying it. If you wake up refreshed in the morning, you don't have sleep apnea. All right? Okay. decreased interest and pleasure in most activities. It's called anhedonia. Doctors call it this, but right. Essentially you don't care about anything. Nothing gives you, you know, what you used to have fun at, or get fun at, that's the right word. It doesn't matter anymore, kind of thing, all right? I practice because I have fun. That sounds terrible. But I have fun getting people better. I have fun taking a mess and turning it around.
Yeah, it's very rewarding.
Very rewarding. I don't win with everybody. You know, I tell my patients, you do everything I tell you. It takes 11 to 16 months, depending if you're a diabetic or not.
Mm-hmm.
85% of the time I win, I'll make you a new man or woman. Mm-hmm. You will love me. You may hate me in between.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You'll think of at the end, if you do it all and it works, you'll think mm-hmm. of the greatest doctor around.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is, there's a bunch of probably another 10 or 15 things we want to go through. Should we take a break, Terry?
And talk about
those or not?
Yeah, we can take an early break. That's okay. Fine. We'll go ahead and do that and then come back.
And we'll go finish all the other symptoms to have, and then we're going to talk about when to treat.
Important aspect, when to treat, because as you pointed out, situational depression and anxiety are self-limited, and after 6 weeks, they'll usually just go away on their own. So making that decision sometimes takes time.
Well, Terry, another thing that happens, maybe just before the break, we should mention, there's certain personalities that are hard to diagnose. In fact, the go-getter, the type A, the classic workaholic, or you know, those type of people, they don't show symptoms like normal. They're not abnormal, but like most people,
typical
people do.
Yeah.
These people, they self-treat themselves by driving themselves faster and faster and faster. Do more and do more and do more.
Right.
All right. Those people are often missed by their doctor. They're missed as having a depression.
And when they crash and burn, they really crash and burn.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to be right back. You're listening to Maximum in the Morning. Good to the last mic drop. We're talking with Dr. Jan Mensink during the practice hour.
Sun coming up over New York City. School bus driver.
There's a good country western song by Brooks and Dunn, Only in America. We had a caller, Dr. Mensink, that called in and wanted to know, can depression be caused by neurological issues like epilepsy?
Let's go into that real quickly.
Okay.
Yes. All right. First of all, depression can be caused. There's several medical illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Medical diagnoses that come from problems in the brain. All right. Probably the biggest issue that doctors miss, and I'm a strong believer, you know, I did neurosurgery for years, so I've seen so many messes of people missing this. But the bottom line, all these people, they need a CT scan of their head or an MRI of their brain, all right? Why? Because lesions in the non-dominant temporal areas,
mm-hmm.
all right, often the temporal tip or real back in the temporal lobe in the dominant area, can cause mimic depression symptoms, all right, and can cause epilepsy, all right, and all this kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. the problem is not the epilepsy. The problem is you've got a lesion in your brain,
yeah.
all right? There are some frontal areas, that can interfere with depression issues close to the midbrain, above the midbrain. Bottom line, epilepsy can cause depression but the key is this patient needs to be imaged.
Right.
MRI or CT scan of his brain. Is there any issues there? All right. Maybe Monday we'll have to get into this, but there's several diagnoses
mm-hmm.
that cause depression.
Yeah.
All right. That
yeah.
can be.
Yeah.
All right.
Cause that chemical imbalance.
Yeah. So. Okay. Next thing is people who are restless. Restlessness, all right? They just can't sit down. They can't relax. They can't. And these are often these type A hyper-driven people,
mm-hmm.
all right? And so to treat their depression, they just work harder, you know, if that's the right word, you know, drive them more, all right? Or the opposite, feeling your body is slowed down. I have no energy. I can't keep going. All right.
You see that more often than the other, don't you?
That's true. That is true. All right. Recurring thoughts of death or suicide. All right. And this usually comes along with what we call hopelessness.
Right.
Hopelessness is one of these symptoms. But they just, why am I here? I'm never going to get better. There's not a chance of getting better.
Mm-hmm.
There's no chance. They can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, to them, there is no light. The light shut off. All right. So these are the people you have to watch for depression issues. All right.
Well, and suicide.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, suicide, depression, suicide issues. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we always ask about guns. All right. These people should not have guns around.
Right.
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Right.
We always ask about that, but these are not people that should have guns. Do you follow? All right. If a patient is hopeless, we tell the family, get the guns out of the house.
Yeah.
Give them to a neighbor, a friend, or a relative until you
somebody to hold for a while.
Until we get you better, kind of thing. All right. Mm-hmm. I don't want that there.
Right.
I don't want that. I was going to say
temptation.
That's a good way of putting it, Terry. All right. The next thing, so recurring thoughts of death or suicide, weight changes up or down. And here's this interesting statistic. If you change your weight more than 5% in 1 month, Terry, mm-hmm. up or down,
right.
5%, all right, in 1 month, the risk goes through the roof that you've got a depression issue. That's amazing, all right?
Not surprising. I've seen it many times.
Yes, the sense of helplessness. All right, we mentioned hopelessness, helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of tied together, but I can't solve this myself. All right. Over pessimism. That's different. You know, we have pessimistic people that are normally pessimistic. That's not what we're talking about. A person is not usually pessimistic that is now pessimistic, okay?
Because I wanted you to make that clarification because, I mean, there's all sorts of personality types. And certain ones are more susceptible to becoming depressed than others.
In fact, we'll go later in the program about just that.
Because you were talking about, you know, religion as being, well, people from certain religions because they've been, it's part of the establishment of that religion is, you know, feeling kind of guilty about certain things that you might or might not be doing.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that people who are kind of introverted or people who have a negative opinion all the time would be probably more susceptible to being depressed.
All right. The next thing I'm going to mention is probably the most important thing I have mentioned the whole program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called early morning awakening. Now, what is that? For the doctors, to the patient, it has no clue. But to a doctor, it's like flashing red lights.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Oh, my gosh. Early morning awakening symptoms. What it means is you go to bed and you wake up 2 in the morning. These people usually wake up with a start. All right?
Mm-hmm.
They can't go back to sleep. Their mind goes over and over all the bad things. They can't turn it off. And they usually think of depression, of suicide and negative thoughts like this.
Suicidal ideation.
Exactly. So if you have early morning awakening,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're listening, you have this, you need to talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
Today kind of thing, all right?
Well, that falls under the category of sleep disorder, doesn't it?
Well, it's a special type of sleep disorder, Terry.
Okay.
Yeah. But this doctors call it early morning awakening, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But what it means is that, it has to do with REM sleep loss. I was going to say depressed REM sleep issues. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go into it because it's a bit too complex to explain it easy. Okay. The idea of I become crabby. You know, I don't know how to define that. But you know, wives usually say, husbands, she's just crabby or he's crabby. You know, but this idea of, I'm not sure how to define it, but they're not their old self kind of thing. Irritability, all right? decreased sex drives. All right. Overeating or appetite loss. We mentioned this idea. If you gain more than 5 pounds or 5% of your weight, lose it or gain it in 1 month, you probably have a depression issue. All right? That's interesting. All right?
Yeah, it is.
There's what's called empty feelings. It's hard to describe, you know, but this feeling that there's nothing.
Yeah, the emptiness.
Emptiness. I don't know how to describe it, but that emptiness feeling, all right? And now, if you have 8 of these, you need to call your doctor up and talk to him.
Let him
do an assessment.
And be honest with them.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Now, who are not, which patients are not honest with their doctors?
Alcoholics.
Alcoholics, yes.
Drug addicts?
No, drug addicts tend to be fairly honest. Men tend to be not want to talk about this stuff. The average man will not open up to his doctor until he's seen him 4.5 times. All right? That's the statistics.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah. We don't like people giving us directions either. So.
Nope. Okay. So when to treat. All right? So if these symptoms are going on more than 6 weeks, you need help. I'm sorry. You need to see your doctor tomorrow. All right? All right. Now, is it reactive? Okay, we mentioned, is it due to something in your life?
Yeah.
All right.
Has there been some trauma? Has there been something that caused you to be depressed?
Partner died, or who knows what? All right.
Right.
Those, if they last longer than 6 weeks, you need to see your doctor and get help because it's turning into a regular depression, not a reactive depression.
Wasn't there a scale? And I know there is because I've taken it before, but a scale where situational things that happen in your life, like the loss of a child and losing your job, gives a score. And when that score totals a certain number, then you're very likely to be depressed within the next couple months.
Yes, there are. They're used more by the psychologists. All right. The other thing is pregnancy. All right. 20% of pregnancies end up with depression issues. All right. And so, again, if this is going on for more than 4 to 6 weeks and you're pregnant, talk to your doctor, i.e., all right, talk to your doctor. And these patients, especially depending on what term they're at, how many weeks they are pregnant, can, number one, cause a lot of or issues for the doctor in treatment, all right? Number two, can cause a lot of issues with respect to abortion, all right? And I'm not for abortion,
right,
Terry. I'm not for abortion, all right? But more important than that is that any woman who has an abortion, every one of them, will end up with guilt issues down the road.
Yeah.
It's not possible. Now, they may hide it and suppress it, and there's a whole bunch of things so they do against it. But if I have a patient that's had an abortion, even 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
You look for this.
I have to look and see, is there any serotonin, any depression issues?
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah, sure.
Because they're a higher risk for depression. All right? That's probably the best way to say it. All right. The next thing I want to mention is Parkinson's disease. All right? We, as you know, we have in the lower Central Valley here, we have an increased incidence of Parkinson's disease, all right? Especially around Arvin and that area down there. But even Bakersfield, all right? We don't know really why, all right? There are some suggestions that maybe these forever chemicals in the water. There's a whole bunch of ideas about it. But we don't really know 100% for sure why.
Haven't pinpointed it yet at this point.
But, and we will. The research will come about that. But that said, if you have Parkinson's disease, part of Parkinson's diagnosis, especially if it's stage 3 or 4, they will automatically. That's not the risk is very high. They'll get a depression issue. All right, those have to be treated with medicines, or bad things happen, Terry. All right,
yeah.
bad things happen. So Parkinson's patients, if you got a family member who's got Parkinson's disease and he looks like he's depressed, talk to your doctor. I just can't say that. So,
and that's what I was going to also mention is the family monitor. You know, the person that is living with this person that is obviously depressed, very often they're the ones that should be encouraging the patient to call the doctor do something about you're pretty depressed right now, and I think you need help.
Yeah. All right. What other illness, all right, has issues with depression? Alzheimer's. All right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a person with Alzheimer's disease and they get depression, they need to be treated. All right?
Because that can go on for a long time.
I will tell you a story, Terry. This is a true story. Years ago, I had a patient that her grandmother had Alzheimer's disease. All right? And her granddaughter flew her out from, I think it was Ohio, and she's going to look after her. All right?
Ooh.
And make a long story short, she bit off more than she could chew. All right?
Mm-hmm.
But she brings grandma in to me. All right? Signs up for the practice, brings grandma in. Grandma's in a wheelchair, can say one or two words, can't barely get up out of the chair. All right? And is a vegetable.
Wow.
But as talking to her history, the history, there was a strong history of previous depression issues. All right? And I treated her depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget. And this is, I think back then, I think I used high-dose Prozac. But anyhow, later she came in. She got out of the chair, said hello, and shook my hand.
Which was amazing.
By treating the depression. So I can't cure the dementia with treating the depression.
Right.
But it is very possible, if you have a dementia with a depression, to raise yourself two levels out of that dementia, okay?
Right.
So if you have a dementia patient, have a doctor make sure there is no depression. And if there is possibly history of depression, I am a strong believer maybe you should treat prophylactically just in case. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
All right? Now, those are judgment calls. I mean, there's no easy answers to that, Terry.
Well, the average case of depression is not something that lasts a couple of days. It's a long-term sort of a challenge.
Terry, let's talk about if you do nothing, Terry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about that. What's the life cycle? Is that the right word to say? You know, the long-term history. What happens to depression if you have a clinical depression and you do nothing?
In 6 months, it usually dissipates.
No. Two and a half years.
I know it was a while.
You know, if you make it through it, there's a cycle. Now, not always, all right, but there's a cycle of depression. The other thing is, if there's any issues with bipolar disease, mania or bipolar 1 or 2, I don't really want to get into that, but if there's any history of that, that needs to be... and there's any dementia issues, talk to your doctor. They need to look at that. Now, these are tough clinical decisions, Terry.
Yeah.
There is no right or wrong. You know, the best thing is to have a doctor who you've been seeing for the last 20 years and knows the patient.
Well, isn't the best...
This is not going to be done well by going to the urgent care.
Yeah.
All right?
Isn't the best scenario to catch it as early as possible? Because the further downhill the patient has gone,
I want to catch them early.
The tougher it is to get their serotonin levels back up back into the swing of life.
All right, there's two groups of patients we have troubles with.
Okay, and then we'll tell everybody about them right after this break.
Exactly.
Excellent. We'll be right back.
LA friends ain't on the edge of no popular trend. Ain't never seen the inside of that magazine GQ. We don't care if you're a lawyer or Texas old man.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Dr. Jan Mensink. We are during the practice hour of Maxwell in the Morning. Good to the last mic drop. And we're covering the subject of depression. And you said that there's two types of maladies that...
Terry, there's two issues with depression. Right?
Yeah.
That are medical issues that are missed. That's the right word. Number one is alcoholics. All right. First of all, the pathology of alcoholism, they're liars. all right, they become liars. And I've been around long enough, I'll figure it out. But they'll lie to themselves. Well, I can quit anytime I want, all right? We tell our patients who are drinking, and in fact, it sort of catches up with them. They don't realize that, you know, pretty soon you're drinking 6 or 8 drinks a day, all right?
Right.
Number two is when they come in the office, we ask them how much they drink, you know, we always double it. unless we know them real well. You know. If they're new, we always double it because they're, you know, that's just the way alcohol abuse is. Number two, I tell my alcoholic, I don't care that you drink, all right? What I do care is that you control it versus it controls you, all right? That's the issue, all right? And there is no way of knowing that. We have them do one thing. Stop all alcohol for 3 months. If you can't do that, it controls you. You don't control it.
Well, it comes straight out of the big book of AA.
Yeah. Bottom line, stop all alcohol for 3 months. You don't control it. It controls you.
No.
Now, we have an alcoholic. Let's say an alcoholic comes into the office Monday morning. All right?
Okay.
And I decide he's an alcoholic. Do I tell him to stop let's say he comes in Friday. All right? Or Thursday.
Okay.
Do I tell him to stop alcohol on Thursday?
Not without more of a plan than alcohol.
Well, here's the issue, Terry. All right? Number one, I have to... he has to get thiamine. 100 milligrams of thiamine, I am. He has to get thiamine. Why? Because if you're an alcoholic and you don't have enough thiamine, and it's very common, they don't have enough thiamine, you stop the alcohol, you go screwy in your brain, and you end up in a mental institution.
No. Oh, okay.
All right? So... if you're listening and you think you're an alcoholic, you see your doctor and get your shot of thiamine, right? Literally. Mm-hmm. So you don't end up with that. And then what we tell them is let's say you come in Friday or Thursday or whatever.
Sure. Close to the weekend.
Yeah. Close. All right. Here's what we tell them. You're going to stop or not stop your alcohol. We give you a shot of thiamine. You're going to cut yourself down to 1 or 2 drinks per day till Monday morning or Sunday. Sunday afternoon. You're going to stop Sunday afternoon. You're going to see me Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for 3 days, every day after, to see if you're having any withdrawal issues that occurs, all right? And if I catch you early, it's an easy medicine treatment. But if you go into DTs because I didn't catch it, it's
now you're
50%, I think it's 42% die, all right? And a whole bunch of, oh my gosh, Costco, it's a mess. Don't want to go there.
Right.
So we see all these alcoholics. We see them every day after they quit totally for 3 days because then it's easy to pick up. You know, a medical school a student could pick it up. It's not hard to figure that out kind of thing. But that gets rid of that risk of going into DTs, all right? Terry, many people, it's probably the most common misused drug thing out there today for people listening. They get caught. They get caught. Well, you know this. They get caught.
Recovering alcoholic.
They get caught before they realize it. It sort of sneaks up on them. They don't even realize they're caught. Do you follow what I'm saying? That's kind of the where it is. And so if you're drinking, I tell people, if you're drinking more than 2 drinks a day and you can't quit, go talk to your doctor. All right? It's maybe end of discussion, all right? Because if you let it go too long, I don't know when that point is, Terry. That magic point when you become an alcoholic. Only God knows that. But there's a point when you become an alcoholic, and you will lie to yourself that I can control.
Well, I was going to tell you when you become an alcoholic, when you quit lying to yourself and realize that you have a drinking problem and you need help. That's when you become an alcoholic. Before that, you're just a drunk. Before that, you just like to have a good time. Before that, you're the life of the party. But at some point, when you're sitting there watching TV and they say, do you do this, there's like 8 things they say. If you do 3 of those, then you probably have a drinking problem. If you do 4, you're an alcoholic. You go, well, I do 6. So I guess I must be an alcoholic. I mean, once the reality hits you and you can no longer deny it, that's when you become an alcoholic.
All right. The next thing, in fact, I had somebody just yesterday talked to me about this. Yes, yesterday. people who use amphetamines, all right? And to a certain extent, so methamphetamines, all right?
Right.
Are often self-treating depression issues, all right? So these patients have to be assessed. Are they depressed, all right? The next thing is there's a drug out there. This is used for obesity. In fact, this person asked me. She went to another doctor, a weight loss doctor, and the doctor put her gave her a prescription for phentermine.
Hmm.
What is phentermine? It's amphetamine.
Yeah.
All right? It's amphetamine. All right? And it will help you lose weight. But what are the issues? If you have any depression issues, you will get fat. All right. Number two is that if you have any depression issues, I give you phentermine, you'll get hooked on it.
I would think so.
Yeah. So it's a two-edged sword. And the phentermine, we used to use it years ago. All right.
Mm-hmm.
The recommendations today, well, it's quite about 4 or 5 years ago. I think American Psychiatric Association came out with this, but should not be used for more than 6 weeks. All right. But
that makes a lot of sense.
It
really does make a lot of sense.
I'm against it, Terry. Yeah. Just because it's just too easy to get caught. All right.
Great. So you're going to be back Monday.
We'll continue. Monday. Essentially, what we're going to talk about Monday is all the things that are treated for, used it, and we'll start with the natural things.
Okay.
That people are buying over the counter, and what to do about them, how much to use if you're going to do that, and how you can get what you have to watch for.
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent. Okay. We'll see you then.
Yep.
We're going to be right back with another one, Bites the Dust, and we'll be done with our program here on a Wednesday.